But starting off this hour of the show, the gaming industry, not only in the U.S., but across the globe, has been a multi-trillion dollar year industry for years now. But in the time since the pandemic, gaming has become more than a pastime. It's a vital connection and community for millions of people. The size and scope of the gaming world has also brought a whole host of other issues: labor, economic, cultural. Political challenges have rocked the gaming industry in recent years, as well as the cultural influence games and gamers now have. And so in light of all that, we've introduced a new weekly segment here on Culture Shift to cover the many facets of the gaming industry. And for that, we have brought in longtime gaming journalist Nate Bender. Nate is also an audio engineer here at WDET, but he's the host of the podcast Let's Play, a daily gaming news podcast. Welcome back to Culture Shift, Nate.
Well, thank you very much, Amanda. And this week, I thought it would be interesting to talk about how games can improve your health. So a couple of recent stories that have been in the headlines that I wanted to share before we got really deep into this. So we've been navigating the world of remote work since the pandemic. Well, what if I told you that companies are experimenting with virtual workplaces and not just like, oh, hey, go to your computer and you can log into your computer at work. No, you strap on VR goggles and suddenly now you're in the office.
Doing work in the virtual world?
Yes.
What?
When you start to think about it a little bit more, it becomes a little bit silly, but there was a study done to see whether or not this new phase, I mean, this is what Meta is pushing. This is what Facebook is pushing as the future for work, for remote work. And so a couple of different universities got the idea to actually test whether or not this would be effective. And what they found was a 20% decrease in mental well-being, a 16% decrease in productivity, a 35% increase in perceived workload, 42% increase in frustration, 19% increase in anxiety, and get this, this is probably not the shocker, but a 48% increase in eye strain.
This sounds awful.
It is awful.
And I
don't think that this is going to be the future of work anytime soon. There were two participants that also left the study on the first day, by the way, due to simulator sickness,
yes,
which is a well-known phenomenon that a lot of people get when they start using VR goggles.
I didn't know that. I didn't know there was a term for that already.
There is.
Simulator sickness.
It's extreme vertigo that sort of VR headsets, depending on how they're made, can have different refresh rates and different frame rates. And if your eyes can't adjust to that or your brain can't quite figure it out, because VR is, you know, by definition, a very disorienting experience. You can walk away from that experience with vertigo and experience the symptoms of vertigo for a long time. So, fortunately, I don't think that this is going to be a reality anytime soon.
That's what I wanted to ask. So, as awful as all this sounds, how soon are companies rolling this out?
Oh, I don't think that they are. I think that this is still Meta trying to convince everyone that, you know, the metaverse and virtual spaces are really actually going to be the next big wave of social media. And I don't think that there's a there.
Not with
there.
Numbers like this.
No. But on the other side of that, there is an Oxford VR program that did get an FDA designation. Oxford VR is a VR startup that's working on an automated VR cognitive therapy. Recent clinical trials of Game Change, a virtual reality treatment for agoraphobic avoidance in patients with psychosis. So this is a way. This is sort of like exposure therapy. 346 patients, out of them, half used Game Change along with their usual care, while of the other half just received their usual care. And the trial showed that the most in the most severe cases, a 49% reduction in avoidance behavior, a 41% reduction in paranoia, and a 21% increase in quality of life after just 6 weeks.
That's so cool. So this is Oxford VR. Is it a British-based company? Because I remember just a couple years ago, the BBC did a long segment on this exact thing, exposure therapy. Done safely, done in a doctor's office through the, at least then, the beginnings of virtual reality.
Yeah, I believe that is correct, that this is based out of the UK, yes. Okay. So it's the exact same program, and now it has an actual FDA designation, which means that it can start being deployed as therapy for agoraphobic avoidance.
That's really interesting. I wonder how long before they expand that to other things that could be healed or at least potentially treated through exposure therapy.
That's a great question. So I actually dove into that world a little bit, and there's actually a lot of different disorders that video games can be used as a treatment for. And I know that there's a lot of people out there that are going to hear that and they're going to go, yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Come on. How do you improve ADHD through using video games? And Akili Interactive is one of these companies that's been at the cutting edge of trying to not just, figure out these theories, but prove them in a very clinical sense. And so I got to sit down with Dr. Adam Ghazaly of Akili Interactive, and I asked him to explain exactly how video games can be applied as medicine.
Well, the basic premise is that our brains and the plasticity of our brains, which means that it can modify itself and improve its function, is really responsive to experience. And every neuroscientist knows this. It's not a contentious point. It's the entire basis of learning. Our education system is based on this concept. Therapy is based on it, that you can have experiences that improve function. Video games are an amazingly powerful experience that has great reward systems built into it. It has deep engagement and immersion due to many of the gameplay elements, and it can be targeted in a very selective way to improve certain brain functions. So, I would say that the underlying foundation of the idea behind video games being a positive force on improving our brain is not that complicated, but what is complicated is the details. How do you do it in a sophisticated way? And then how do you validate it with very careful experimentation to know that the outcomes are as you hope they would be?
That's Dr. Adam Ghazaly of Akili Interactive. We're here talking to Nate Bender. He is a longtime video game journalist here in the city of Detroit, talking about how games can be used as therapy, as potentially medicine for all sorts of disorders and issues that folks are dealing with. And again, this is Culture Shift. I'm Amanda LeClaire here with Tia Graham as well.
Yeah. So, Nate, what did the doctor find out when they initially did some of the research and gathered some of that data?
So what's really interesting about video games is that they actually, because they're digital and they're literally written in data, the data that you can actually get back out of them as people use them is incredibly effective, and it can get incredibly very, very specific,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
you can track users and where their eye placement is as long as you have the equipment to do that. But other things, just like simple, things like where the character on the screen goes, at what time and what prompted them to do that, there's very, very specific data that you can draw out of that. And that's how Akili Interactive is able to hyper-focus to be able to find and build programs that expose your brain to the different sorts of therapies that we use through regular education and have for years.
So it's so interesting. So potentially getting into things like, the color that the game is using, the sound that it's using, where on the screen something is placed, you can then start to potentially target certain areas of the brain. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. Yes. And, and you know, again, this is mostly exposure therapy. It's not medicine, right? It is something to be able to train your brain as either a diagnostic tool or as a therapeutic tool. And I think that that can't be understated. So I also had the opportunity to talk to Dr. Ghazaly about his program called Endeavor RX, which is an FDA-approved treatment for attention deficit and hyperactivity disorder in children ages 8 through 12. And a lot of what that is being able to use the imagination and the connection that, you know, the patients form with the game itself, to be able to slow down some of those thought processes and train the brain to slow down in certain circumstances, which I think is an actually way better approach than using drugs and medicine. So I had the opportunity to ask Dr. Ghazaly what he thought video games could be used to treat other than ADHD.
Oh, we think it's going to be as broad as there are conditions in neurology and psychiatry. There's not a day that goes by that I don't have several conversations with physicians and scientists around the world that are fascinated with the potential of video games, whether they're presented on consoles, mobile devices, or virtual reality, or who knows, augmented reality, where this will go in the future. And the conditions that are already in study are incredibly broad. So PTSD, which you mentioned, but traumatic brain injury, depression, autism, anxiety, Alzheimer's disease, multiple sclerosis, all of these are studies that we're connected with, and there's even more than that going on. So if there is a understanding of the brain changes and the networks that are degraded or don't develop sufficiently in a condition, then it's possible to design a game, the mechanics, the adaptivity and feedback that put pressure on those networks to help optimize them over time.
This is so cool, Nate. I am so glad you brought this to the table. You know, it's something I hadn't even put together. You know, is this, as we're talking about this, almost brainwave entrainment that can be done using video games? It is a, it's a therapy that a lot of people are looking more into, whether it's something like binaural beats, which use different tonalities in each ear to then entrain your brain to work in a different way, the two hemispheres of it. And something I'm really interested in is something called EMDR, eye movement desensitization reprocessing. So in therapy, you look to a light that's happening on one side of there, left and right, and literally as you go through a traumatic experience or talk about it, your brain is forging new neural pathways to deal with that.
And these are exactly the types of things that video games are well positioned to engage with, to be able to, you know, better, I mean, better distribute these types of therapies, right? Like there seems to be a slightly automated portion of those therapies, whether it's producing the tonal changes or whether it's the movement of the light, that if you, you know, as Dr. Ghazaly had wonderfully put earlier, if you understand the way that those neural pathways are formed, then you can absolutely find a way to be able to treat it therapeutically through something like a video game. And I think, Amanda, that you'll be really interested in what Deepwell Digital Therapeutics is doing, because they were founded by Devolver Digital co-founder Mike Wilson and Ryan Douglas, but their mission is to really bring the world of entertainment and medical science together, and they held a game jam. So I don't know if you guys know what a game jam is.
No.
This is where game developers, indie game developers, people who write code will come together and be given a frame of time to be able to build a program in, and the one who comes up with the best concept and is able to execute it in a way that at least shows what the concept is wins a prize. And so I wanted to actually talk about some of the winners from this year's Game Jam, because it had 99 entries. And these are some really cool things. So The first place went to Inner Room, a game called Inner Room. So Inner Room is a game where you play 3 days of a lockdown as a person dealing with depression. His place is of true elaboration in his dreams. So when awake, our main character must complete the most mundane tasks, right? Like filling up the coffee pot or, going to the kitchen to get a snack, right? It's very mundane. But when you're asleep, it becomes this dreamscape. And so you're going to need your whole computer, your whole keyboard to be able to solve these problems. So it goes from very mundane controls to very complex controls in a way that I think brings a lot of understanding to something like depression, which is, I think, very difficult for people who have never experienced it to understand.
That's so interesting.
Right?
So, I mean, in depression in real life, you are really low of energy, you're really low of motivation. So is that something the character in the game would be dealing with?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. And it translates that experience, I think, really well, for both, as sort of an empathetic tool, as a tool to, bring yourself into somebody else's life who's really struggling. Another one that I absolutely love is called Everyday Lemonade, which was made by Biotopico. The name of the game is Biotopico, made by Everyday Lemonade. Flip that around. So in Biotopico, players can grow real trees using oxygen as a resource that's produced from their real breath.
What?
So you guys have seen these apps that are like designed to help you with your breathing and your mental space. Well, translate that into a game. Now the game records all of these breathing exercises that you're doing. And in the game, you're growing a tree with the oxygen that you're producing. And the coolest part is that the game developers, Everyday Lemonade, have agreed to plant one tree for every digital tree that's grown through their game.
That's
so interesting.
And it seems like it's a passive game, too. So you don't have to actively play it. You just kind of link it to something and then boom.
Yeah, absolutely. It tracks your progress as you go and gives that back to Everyday Lemonade. It's just a concept that I absolutely adored when I heard about it.
And I think for folks who haven't done a breathing practice or anything, it's more than just breathing in and out. There's different ways. They're four-fold breath or box breathing. Breathing for 4 seconds, holding it in, breathing out even more slowly. I wonder if in the game there's different ways of breathing to grow different trees at different rates.
Yeah, wow.
So I don't know about different trees, but I do know that there are different breathing exercises in there to sort of reinforce a lot of those positive therapeutic benefits from just simply breathing and being mindful of your breath. And then the third place that won this game jam is called Fumble. So Fumble is a puzzle game about how it feels to struggle to talk. Mm-hmm. If you've ever known somebody who has aphasia or has some sort of dementia that affects their speech, I think this is a really, really important game. My grandpa had Alzheimer's, and the first thing to go was his ability to speak and communicate. And so it tells the story of someone who's suffering from social anxiety without realizing it. The gameplay acts as a playable metaphor of social anxiety and offers what we believe is one of the possible representation of what it feels like to have the condition. So it's putting you in the place. Again, very empathetic, walking a mile in somebody else's shoes. And they won third place out of the game jam. Just some really beautiful concepts that, again, they push the notion of what a video game is. I think if you ask somebody what a video game is and they told you, well, it's breathing to be able to grow a digital tree, I think a lot of that's not that's not people's first response. So I absolutely love concepts like this. And then one of the last things I wanted to share is a therapy called MindPod, which is developed for traumatic injuries. And it was developed by Dr. Omar Ahmad, at Johns Hopkins University. And so MindPod is an immersive video game inspired therapy that uses motion sensors and cameras to track patients' movements, which then translates into the movement of a dolphin named Bandit.
Oh, Bandit.
Yes. So Bandit's movements on screen are both used to show progress in rehabilitation of the patient and motivate them to continue doing better in the therapy. I mean, you know, how many times have you been pushed without a really good motivation? You just got to kind of gut it out and dig it up. Well, this gives you some of the endorphins that you get from succeeding at a video game.
When I hear you talk about this game, I just think about, you know, military servicemen and women who have gone through losing a limb or suffering something like that. This would be perfect for that type of therapeutic needs.
Absolutely. And in fact, that's actually the example that they gave in the article that I read, was a woman learning to walk using a prosthetic leg. And, you know, I just think that there's so much benefit that comes from the variety of approaches that we're seeing in people who have stepped into this field. But, you know, just like everything, it's not all roses. It's not all sunny.
Yeah. I really want to get into that. We had a few minutes left in this conversation, and it's a lot of stuff to get into. But we need to talk about gaming disorders.
Yes. So gaming disorder was actually recognized and put into the DSM a couple of years ago. And look, for someone who is as big of a fan of video games as I am, you know someone who has gaming disorder who cannot disconnect. They, for whatever reason.
What are some of those signs?
I think, you know, just living in a fantasy world 100% of your time. You know, a lot of avoidant behavior comes out of gaming addiction. A lot of isolation as well. But then there's also the financial side, and that's a little bit easier to diagnose. Unfortunately, game companies have gotten really, really good, just as we were talking about earlier with all of the different points that video game companies can use to collect data on how you play a game. They're still collecting data on you, whether you're playing Candy Crush or whether you're playing Mario. There is some sort of data tracking that's going on. And as data tracking and being able to report that data back, because remember, there was a time in video games where video games were not online, and so developers couldn't get access to that data. Now they do, and I don't know if it's too strong to say this, but some game developers are weaponizing the way that they're developing specifically microtransactions in their games, things that, you know, when you look at them on their face, they're $1.99, and you don't think that that's going to end up being a big expense, but the way that they're presented and the way that the game developers manipulate the user, it's very predatory, and it's really starting to get concerning because they're preying on people who have a predilection for gambling addiction, and they know it.
Mm-hmm. And in the way that they're preying on those folks, you talk about they're not just collecting data, but they're specifically programming games to to hit that dopamine receptors in our brain. You know,
that's 100% correct. A great example of this is Diablo Immortal, a recent game. It's connected to the Diablo franchise, a hugely popular franchise from Activision Blizzard. But the way that they've chosen to monetize this, get this. So if you want to max out your character in Diablo Immortal, it's going to cost you between $300,000 and $600,000, depending on how lucky you are.
$1,000?
$100,000. What? $300,000 and $600,000. Now, you can play this game entirely for free and not engage in their microtransactions. But do you want to take a ballpark guess on how long you would have to play this game to be able to max out your character?
100 years.
10 years. 10
years.
10 years. 100 years is a little bit
right,
much.
I'm just thinking of thousands of dollars. I'm like, what the heck?
Yeah, and really, you know, what this comes down to is a phenomenon that's happened inside of the gaming industry. Wow. And I think we've seen this other places too. But it's really a term and a thought process and an ethos that's really comes out of gambling. And that is trying to maximize your quote-unquote whales. And what whales are, you know, a handful of individuals that are either, you know, participating in the game or the app, but they're the ones that are spending tens of thousands of dollars to be able to compete in this, you know, digital marketplace of, you know, beating up gremlins. It's very weird, but the dopamine yes. that is released and the psychological aspects that are being manipulated are very, very real.
Nate, I get extremely excited when I buy a new pack for The Sims. So
absolutely.
I get it.
Absolutely. And everyone gets excited when they, you know, when they buy a new piece of DLC or they buy something that they just can't wait to play with.
Yes.
But when advancement in the game that you're playing is dependent on how much you're investing out of your wallet, I think that that's an incredibly unfair environment. And sadly, you know, the calls to regulate these types of practices have kind of fallen on deaf ears. There was a big push 3 or 4 years ago internally in the U.S. to regulate things like loot boxes. That hasn't happened. And the U.K. government just said last week that they're refusing to regulate loot boxes as well. And until there's actual pressure being put on these gaming companies and gaming developers, they're going to try to maximize their profits.
I mean, I think with a lot of things in the digital world, the regulatory system is just not existent. It's not on its radar.
Yeah, no. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
All right, Nate, well, before we wrap up, what are you playing lately?
So I talked about it a couple of weeks ago, and I'm so excited to be able to talk about it again. I got Stray. Yes, and both myself and my cat Fritz both enjoy the game a lot. There's a dedicated meow button, so you need to know that right away. It's a little less open world than I thought it was, but there's a lot of a story. There's a mystery there at the center of it, and you're just the cat, so you got to figure it out.
It's so much fun.
You're just a cat.
Yeah, to remind people, this is a whole game where you play as a stray cat, literally.
You do.
And there's only cats and robots in this world. And so
yes.
I've been seeing Tia sent me a video on TikTok of someone's cat just like jumping at the computer at the TV screen to
yes.
like try to enter this world along with the
absolutely
other stray cat.
Absolutely. And PC players have gotten really, really inventive, and they've started modding their own cats in as the main cat that they can play.
Wow.
How adorable is that?
Fritz is playing Stray. He's in Stray.
I could put him in Stray if I wanted to.
I love it.
Absolutely adorable.
All right. Thank you guys so much, Nate Bender, an audio engineer here at WDET, but most importantly, a longtime gaming journalist. He hosts the gaming podcast, the daily gaming podcast, Let's Play. Another great segment, Nate. We'll see you next week, next Thursday.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you as well, Tia. We'll be back in a few minutes here. We'll do the roundup in a couple, about 10 minutes or so. We'll have Rob Reiner's pick of the week coming up next. And for the dance party, get into some new reissues of some great classic funk and world music here on 101.9 WDET. This is Detroit's NPR station. The show is Culture Shift.